I will be in Camp Simcha on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, so I'm not going to have the opportunity to share thoughts here with the shul, although I did arrange for a very good replacement to come here and speak on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg from Florida will be speaking here, so I needed to make sure you're in good hands, and you are certainly in good hands. So he will be speaking here in the afternoon on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz between Mincha and Maariv. But I thought it was an opportunity just to share, we'll start this year today with a thought about Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, because we are already in the month of Tammuz, and our mindset should be shifting a little bit toward the understanding of Churban Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara says in Maseches Tainis, why is it that we commemorate Shiva Asar B'Tammuz? What happened on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz? So the Gemara says that a number of things happened. Number one, Nishtabru HaLuchos, the Luchos were destroyed. Batel HaTamid, the Karban Tamid that was brought every day in the Beis HaMikdash twice a day, they stopped offering that. Huvka'a Ha'ir, that's when the city of Yerushalayim was under siege or broken into. Saraf Apustamos Es HaTorah, one of the enemies of the Jewish people, burnt the Torah. V'ha'amidu Tzelem BeHeichal, and they put an idol into the Heichal, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the Beis HaMikdash. So I once saw an insight of Reb Shamshon Rafael Hirsch where he says, you know, there are terrible things that happen in the world. There are terrible personal tragedies that people go through. And he says, the Gemara does have a rule called Miskasha al Meso Yoser Midai. If you continue to cry and be misabel for some kind of terrible tragedy that happened in your life, the Gemara has very terrible things to say about such a person. We have a system of avelos. We have Shiva. We have Aninos first, then Shiva, then Shloshim, Yud Beis Chodesh. We mark the anniversary every year, but how long can you go on like that? And Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch says he believes, of course, the Churban Beis Hamikdash and all of these other things were extremely significant. It wasn't just somebody who went through a personal loss. But he has an idea where he suggests that perhaps a lot of what was lost then continues to be an issue in our generation. It's not something that happened once. It's something that continues to happen. And that is, in his words, that priorities are not where they're supposed to be. What happened in those five events that are outlined is not just five different disparate events that took place and they all just coincidentally happened on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. All of them, in Rav Hirsch's understanding, highlight the fact that there was a loss of priority. No longer were we centered around the Beis HaMikdash. No longer was our focus around Karbanos. It was not that every decision that we made in our life is about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what was lost on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. That we became fragmented, that our minds now made decisions that were made by other kinds of focuses, that we didn't have a central focus any longer on the ideals and the values that a Torah Jew is supposed to be about. And that was the great tragedy of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz that continues to linger in our lives. I mentioned a few weeks ago that my Bar Mitzvah Parsha was Parshas Yisro. Happens to be Parshas Yisro is a beautiful Parsha. It's a hard thing to say. Every Parsha is a beautiful Parsha. But Parshas Yisro in particular has the Aseres Adibros, so it's a very significant Parsha, but the Haftorah of Parshas Yisro is also a very significant Haftorah. And I would never have known this Haftorah other than the fact that I had to learn it, so that's why I know it by heart. But in the Haftorah, the Navi Yeshaya, and Rashi comments, although this is in Perek Vav of the Navi Yeshaya, he says this is the first Nevuah that the Navi Yeshaya ever had in his career. So this is an extremely significant Nevuah, according to the way Rashi understands it. And what exactly is the Nevuah? So the Navi Yeshaya has a divine imagery. We're familiar with the Maisa HaMarkava. Maisa HaMarkava is when the Navi Yecheskel had these divine images and he was able to see the inner workings of what happens in heaven and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu does certain things in the world. And that's something that's considered to be a very holy Nevuah of the Navi Yecheskel. It happens to be that there's a parallel Nevuah that's very similar in the Navi Yeshaya as well. And that's this Perek Vav in Sefer Yeshaya. And the Navi there tells us that it happened to be one day, Va'erez Hashem Yoshev Akisei Ram V'Nisa. I was granted the opportunity to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu sitting on His heavenly throne. Vishulav Mele'im Es HaHechol, and he says it was an overwhelming scene. It was a staggering scene for me to see, the Navi Yeshaya writes. It's like God's presence filled up the entirety of the room, the entirety of the space. And then he says, I noticed Srafim Omdim Imalo, I saw that there were angels, there were malachim, Srafim, that were standing, hovering above God Himself. Sheish Knafayim La'achad, each one of them had six wings. B'shtai mechase panav, why does a malach have to have six wings? What's the reason for six wings? We see that birds can fly with two wings, so what do they need six wings for? So he says what the six wings were for. It happens to be, I was at a Levaya a couple of years ago. Anybody here from Queens? And do you remember Mr. Cooperman? Mr. Cooperman was an amazing Jew, and he was a very close friend of my parents for many, many, many years. It's funny to say he was a Talmud of my father. He was probably 20 years older than my father, I assume, maybe more. But he used to go to my father's shir for probably 30 years, so they became very, very close. And when I went to Mr. Cooperman's Levaya, I heard a tremendous insight that Mr. Cooperman had said about my father that I never heard from him. We were very close with him, but I had never heard this from Mr. Cooperman. I heard it from his rabbi who spoke at the Levaya. And as Rabbi said, many people asked over the years, why was Mr. Cooperman so close with Rabbi Schechter? What was it about Rabbi Schechter that made him so interested? And he said, Mr. Cooperman finally explained to him why. He said, the Navi here tells us that when he describes what an angel looks like, it's an angel has six wings, but he only flies with two of them. So what does he use the other four? So it says that he uses the other four for something else. But the Malach is created with six, and he only flies with two. So Mr. Cooperman said the following amazing vort. He said, the Gemara says that you have to choose a Rebbe who's like a Malach Hashem Tzevakos. What does it mean? Your Rebbe has to be like a Malach. He has to be infallible? Of course not. We believe every human being makes mistakes. So what does it mean you have to choose a Rebbe who's like a Malach? So everybody has their interpretations of what the Gemara means. Mr. Cooperman said after he read this pasuk in the Haftorah, he understood what it meant. He said, you have to choose a Rebbe who has six wings, who's able to fly, who knows so much Torah, above and beyond anything he'll ever teach. But b'shtayim yo'ofeif, he only uses two when he flies in the shir. He brings it down to the level of the people who are able to understand it, and he doesn't try to overwhelm them with his knowledge. You can be the greatest, most brilliant Torah scholar, but that doesn't help people. You have to figure out how to channel all the information that you have and only use two of your wings to bring it to the people to the level that they're up to. And he said that's what he admired most about my father. He said, Rav Schechter can be giving a shir klali in every big yeshiva in the world, but when he sits and he learns with the group of people on Tuesday night, that's where Mr. Cooperman used to go to the shir, he said that he felt that my father had six wings, but he only flew with two of them because he was doing a favor to the people who were sitting there with him. To me, that was a tremendous insight, really a beautiful tribute to my father. I'm not sure why they said it at Mr. Cooperman's Levaya. I'm not sure why they were being maspid my father, but it was an interesting idea nonetheless. So here the Navi Yeshaya writes that he was able to have a vision of seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not only that, he saw the angels, he saw the malachim. And then he was allowed to watch as V'karaze Elzevi Amar, he heard as the malachim were responding to one another, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzevakos, Meloch HaLaaretz Kevodo. We say that in the davening every day. But that's something that's the highlight of the tefillah, of the praise, of the shevach, that the malachim offer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he says, all of a sudden, the entirety of the space filled up with smoke. V'habayis yimalei ashan. Everything was overtaken with smoke. V'omar, and he says, I stood there and I was paralyzed. Oy li ki nidmesi. Ki isht meis vasayim anochi. I reminded myself, says the Navi Yeshaya, how lucky I am to see this amazing vision, to see the malachim, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then I reminded myself, ki isht meis vasayim anochi. I'm just a human being, and I use my mouth the same way that everybody else does. Obviously he didn't, but he's just saying that I'm not worthy of such an image. Oy li kinid mesi, I can't believe it. Uvesocham tmeis vasayim anochi yoshev, and I live amongst men, I live amongst human beings. How am I worthy of seeing this amazing vision, and yet I'm so grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he allowed me to see it. So the Dubna Magid asks, what does it mean when he says, his immediate response as he sees this overwhelming vision and he sees everything fills up with smoke, his immediate response is, oy li kinid mesi. What does that mean? Oy li kinid mesi. How do you translate the words? So, he gives such a powerful mashal. The Dubna Magid passed away in 1804. He was one of the great gedolim who lived at the same time as the Vilna Gaon. And lest you say that he just had nice parables that were, you know, sweet stories, he was known to be one of the only people in the world that the Vilna Gaon allowed to give musar to him. So there's obviously something very profound and very deep about the mashalim of the Dubna Magid, and it's not just that he was a storyteller, he was a tremendous force in the end of the 1700s. So, on this pasuk, he has a really powerful insight. And I found that until I saw this mashal, I really had no understanding. I guess it's not an accurate way to say it. I never thought of the question in the first place. I never was bothered by this pasuk because I never studied it. But after I saw it, it gives such incredible meaning to what the Navi says here. So let me tell you this story that he gives. Mashal, emshal achal mashal, as often the Dibna Magid did, he gives a mashal. Lemozeg, you have a bartender in a city, Yoshe b'kvar shalo lamad rak ha-sefer tse'enu rena. How many people here have heard of the Sefer Tse'enu Rena? It's not so in style anymore, but our parents, our grandparents, used to spend a lot of time learning the Sefer Tse'enu Rena. What is that? It's a very basic Sefer where they collected all of the stories from Chazal, all the different Midrashim, all the different stories from the Gemara, and it was a very beautiful read. On Shabbos, many times in Europe, people used to read from the Sefer Tse'enu Rena, and they would teach their children the stories of Chazal. So, he says there was a very simple person who was a bartender in a town, and he was very familiar with the Sefer Tse'enu Rena, but that's basically where his knowledge ended. That's what he knew, that's what he learned. He didn't really know Chumash, didn't really know anything else, he knew the stories. And he said, V'yidiyaso haisa b'luach hashana. He was literate, he knew how to read, so he also knew how to read the Jewish calendar. You know, I have an Ezra's Torah luach that I keep in my shtender here. So why do I have it here? Because every so often there's a question, do we say Avarachamim today? Do we say Tachanun today? Do we say Halo tomorrow? All kinds of questions. So you look in the luach. So this guy knew how to navigate the luach, not so hard. So he, he had it in a shtender and that's what he knew how to do. Baha Nashim, however, he says he lived in a town where everybody was so ignorant and they were so illiterate. Nobody was learned at all. A nice, innocent group of people. He says, Hanashim hapchusim imenu. There were many people in the town who didn't know a thing, and whenever there was a shaila and shul about saying Tachanun and Avarachamim and when's Rosh Chodesh, he would be able to answer the questions. Why? Not because he was such a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, but because he simply knew how to read the calendar. So here he is, he comes to shul, and every time there's a question, they would present it to him, and he always knew the answer. And he started to believe that he's really a very incredible force in his town. He's like almost becoming the leader of the community. Look at me. Look what happens. Every time there's an issue in shul, the only person they turn to is me. Every time a question came up, he would look in the luach and he would give an answer. He comes home one night, he tells his wife, Shimina, I want to tell you something that just dawned on me, just came to my attention. I want to hear, what's the news? Vayomer Eleah, he says, Halotedi ki ani lamdin gadol, vanochi lo yadati adata. You know, you thought you were marrying a simple guy. You thought you were marrying a bartender. I want you to know, you really got a good deal. Because it turns out, I'm not as simple as you thought. I'm really a great person. And his wife says, Echacha nisvada alecha hadavar. Where do you get this idea from? How did you come to that realization? And he says, you don't understand. Lo pam velo shtayim. This just didn't just happen once. This just continues to happen every single day. I come to shul. Everybody's waiting online to talk to me because all of them who have questions come to me. And he says, it has to be that I'm a really great individual. And it must be that you really married well. And she's so excited. And she says, you know, you're not only a nice husband and a great father, but you're also a tzaddik nister. You know, you didn't even tell me all these years. It's just amazing. Now one fine day, his bar runs out of drinks, and he has to go take a ride somewhere else to another town to negotiate some new drinks, whatever he needs to do. And he has to travel to a big city. So here he is living in this tiny little shtetl. He has no exposure to the outside world. And now the first time in his life, he's venturing out and he has to go visit a big city. And he gets stuck there for the Yom Naraim. V'rabi batei knesios, he walks into the shul and he sees there's a dafyomi shir going on. And he sits down and he can't even understand the words. He doesn't even know how to hold a gemara. And he raises his hand and he asks, can somebody tell me where are you up to? They show him we're on the fourth line. He doesn't even know. Fourth line Rashi, fourth line Tosfos, the right side, the left side, the middle. Doesn't even know how to navigate a page of the Gemara. He says, okay, this must be the greatest yeshiva that I just walked into. This is not for me. He walks into another shul and he sees there's a shir on Chumash Rashi. And he asks them, can somebody help me out? How do I follow along? And they say, just grab a Chumash from the back. He doesn't even know how to find the Chumash. He doesn't know what a Chumash looks like. And for the first time in his life, he finally wakes up from his tremendous fantasy. and he says, "Oy li kinid mesi." All this time, I was living this delusion. I was living this complete self-absorbed life, not realizing that my perspective is totally off. And it wasn't until I was exposed to something greater than myself that I finally realized my whole life is one big dimyon. My whole life is one big imagination, but none of it is real. And that's when it hit him. Writes the Dubna Magid, it's exactly what happened to the Navi Yeshaya. Here he was living a life, acting as a Navi, and doing a great job. And he convinced himself that he's a really great person. And rightfully so. He was doing his job, a noble job. He was doing exactly what God wanted him to do. V'hanimshal, Yeshaya HaNavi bir'oso es atzma rushim b'dora b'chachma b'gvura b'osher echadomim in amailos. The Navi Yeshaya is very successful in all different ways. Hayayakar be'enav mitziuso. He began to believe that he's really a very powerful force in the world. But then, suddenly, in one second, he realizes that it's all just one big illusion. When he's given the great gift of seeing greatness, of seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of seeing Malachi HaShares, of understanding that there's so much more to the world than just me, and that I'm not the one who really is the force behind everything that goes on in the world, the first thing he says is, "Oy li kinid mesi." Here I was, I thought I was so significant, I thought I was so prominent, I think I'm so influential, and I just realized for the first time in my life that it's just self-absorption. That all of my priorities are wrong. That so many things about my understanding of the world are off. And that is the way the Dubna Magid explains this comment. That, writes Rav Hirsch, is exactly what happened on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. We don't cry about the fact that a building fell down or that Yerushalayim was destroyed. Obviously, it's something to cry about, but not 2,000 years later. Why are we still crying? Because at that moment, we lost the opportunity to have a full perspective. We used to be able to have the engagement with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We used to be able to see that there's something greater than ourselves in the world. This is where our priorities are. This is the way we make decisions. And that is no longer. That's why we cry. That's why we're Misabel. That's the reason why we continue to commemorate the day of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, because our entire life is one big fantasy. It's one big illusion. And we don't have that opportunity to wake ourselves up any longer. And I thought about it this Shabbos, you know. As I said before, for anyone who is here, one of the things that I always find, my whole life I'm exposed to Gedolei Yisrael. But many people are not. And I appreciate the fact that many people don't have the experiences that I have. But when we have the opportunity in our lives to be exposed to Gedolei Yisrael and to understand what real godless is all about, what real greatness is all about, and we understand, you know, there are many people in our lives who can say, you know, that they're great Talmidei Chachamim, but then you meet a real Talmid Chacham and you understand there's a big difference. And you're finally opened up to the possibility that Oy li kinid mesi, all of my understandings were off. And I'm not as great as I thought. And I always find opportunities like this to be ones that we need to cherish and ones that we need to understand. Because we get so caught up with different definitions of influence, with different definitions of what's important and what we should celebrate. You know, somebody was telling me last night, it was a great story, that after 9/11, my father was taken to the site and they wanted to show him everything that was going on there just a few days later, because they wanted him to understand there were many shailas, unfortunately, of Aguna that had to be figured out. And my father felt that unless he sees it with his own eyes, he couldn't really have an appreciation or understanding of what it was. So I was told that he wore one of those hard hats and they brought him onto the scene. And it just so happened to be that Joe Torre was there at the time, for those who remember Joe Torre, and the third baseman from the Yankees was there as well. And the person who was bringing him asked my father, "Do you know who they are?" And my father said, "Do they know who I am?" It's an amazing line, but it's true. Who cares who they are? Who cares who they are? Do they know who I am? For anyone who knows my father, you know he's not a Balgaiva. But it's so true. Where are our priorities? Oy li ki nidmesi. That's what we lack without a Beis HaMikdash. And I have to say, the past few summers, my wife and I have had a tremendous schus to serve as volunteers in Camp Simcha. People sometimes say to me, you know, it's crazy that you go there for free. It's crazy that you go and you just volunteer of your time, and it's so overwhelming. And it doesn't just stop at the summer. It continues on after the summer and throughout the year. And we have a lot to do with many of the situations that come up during the year. I don't know if I mentioned recently what happened with one of the campers. Did I say what happened? Yeah, so I find that it's incredibly uplifting to be with 120 campers who all have challenging physical disability or devastating life-threatening illnesses. Many of them are confined to wheelchairs and feeding tubes and trachs, but I have to say that they all have the most infectious smiles and the most amazingly positive hearts and souls. And every year after I come home from 2 weeks being with these kids, I always think about how much I learned from them. I actually walk around the camp with a notebook because so many of the kids come over and talk to me, and I'm so inspired by them. I actually write down the things that they teach me. I then usually come back and share it with everybody else with their permission. But it's such a powerful reminder to me that so often the way I live life is just an illusion. And it's moments like that that give us the opportunity to recalibrate once again and to remind ourselves what's really important and what perhaps is completely insignificant and just trivial. And I will never forget, there was a girl by the name of Devorah from, I'm not going to say where she was from, but at a very young age, I think it was 12 years old, she was told by the doctors that she was very quickly going to go blind. And the doctor said that she only had 4 months until she lost her entire ability to see. And her parents said to her, you know, they felt so bad. They were so devastated by this news. And they said, whatever it is in the world that you would want to do in the next 4 months, just tell us, and we'll provide it for you. Wherever you want to go, anything you want to see. And this girl got up in camp and she said that it was obvious to her that there was only one answer. All she wanted to do was go for 2 or 3 weeks to Eretz Yisrael. And she said, I had no interest in Disneyland or the Swiss Alps. She said, my parents gave me the option to go everywhere, and they went through everything. And she said, my reaction was, all I want to do is to have the schus of seeing the land of Eretz Yisrael. She said she went, and she spent 3 weeks going around to every city in the country, every city in the land, and just looking around at the streets and taking in the experience of Eretz Yisrael. When I heard that, I said to myself, you know, I've been to Eretz Yisrael so many times. Have I ever in my life felt the connection, the Avas Eretz Yisrael that this girl had? If I would be asked to go anywhere in the world, would that really be my most obvious choice? Would that be the only place where I would want to go if I was given the option to go anywhere? Would I really spend my time in Eretz Yisrael just looking at the streets and appreciating what the land of Eretz Yisrael is about? It's people like that who give us the opportunity to recalibrate and to reevaluate what the priorities are supposed to be in the world. And the reason why that's so complicated is because we say every Rosh Chodesh, we say a piyut at the end of davening, Baruch Nafshi Es Hashem, which is a very beautiful tefillah. I know people run through it because it's at the end of a long davening on Rosh Chodesh with Halal and Musaf, but it's a very beautiful tefillah. In the middle, there's a cryptic pasuk that the Gemara Bava Metzia picks up on. It says, Tashas Choshech Vihi Laila. The Gemara learns from that that it means, Zeh Ha'olam Hazeh Shedome Lelaila. That's a description of our world. That's just a very disorienting world. It's a very confusing world. Olam Hazeh is Dome Lelaila. A person thinks that there are certain assumptions of how the world runs, of why the world runs the way it does, and we then come to the realization, if we're lucky enough, to realize that our understanding is so faulty and it's so inaccurate. So the Gemara says an amazing story in Maseches Pesachim Daf Nun that Rabbi Yosef Beredi Rabbi Shuv Ben Levi Chalash, it says that Rabbi Yosef got sick one day Ve'isnagid gava, and it says that he died. And then it says that he came back. So I'm not sure exactly what happened, but it says that he actually passed away and then he came back. And all of his friends saw this. They were all sitting around in the Beis Medrash one day and they saw their friend passed away. And then a few minutes later he came back to life and they asked him, "What did you see? You know, you died for a few minutes. We're just curious, now that you're back, can you share with us what you were privy to see?" And he says, "Olam hafich ra'isi. I saw an upside down world. Elyonim lamata v'tachtonim lamala. All of the assumptions that I had about our world were totally off base. Everything was wrong. Elyonim lamala v'tachtonim lamata. All the people who I thought were so dignified, were so important in this existence, in this world, I got an insight into God's world and I saw that they're nothing. They're totally insignificant. And then I saw the opposite. All the people who we laugh at, who we think are totally unimportant, I realized that God really values those people. And everything I had an understanding of in the world seems to be off, seems to be wrong." And that, the Gemara says, is the insight that he shared with his friends. This is illustrated so powerfully by the Sefer Gesher HaChaim. Gesher HaChaim is written by Rabbi Chiel Michel Tukachinsky, who was one of the great Gedolim in Yerushalayim. And he has in one of his introductions to his book, it's a three-volume Sefer about many of the halachos of Avelus, which is a very comprehensive Sefer. But he has a very beautiful mashal where he talks about the embryo, where there were twins that were in the womb. And they're having a lovely time. And they're spending time with each other. And these two brothers are, you know, talking every day. And they're eating every day. And they're going out to breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. And it's great. And they're communicating. And they're having a really nice time. And one of them turns to the other and he says, "You know, I'm not sure. Something's nagging at me. I get the feeling that at some point we're going to have to leave this place." And the other one turns to him and he says, "Are you crazy? What do you think? This is everything. This is it. Where else is there to go? This is all they know." And the other brother turns to him and he says, "I'm not sure. Just I got this idea in my head that at some point we're just not going to be here anymore." And the other brother turns back and he says, "Don't you see how perfect this existence is? Don't you see that this is like the utopian life? What could be better? We get meals on demand. Nobody bothers us. We don't have any background noise getting in our way. We just spend time with each other all day. We don't have to work. We don't have to do anything. This is amazing. What can possibly be better than this?" One fine day, woman goes into labor. And one of the twins starts slipping out from his mother's womb. And his brother begins to cry. And he says, "My brother's dying." And the brother on the other end is crying that his brother doesn't understand how lucky he is. And he comes out into a world and suddenly he realizes that for 9 months I was limited. I was so constricted. I was confined to a small place. I had no understanding of what was out there in the world. And now I come out into the world and I'm crowded around by people who love me. And I have food and I have clothing and I have all the amenities of life. And I'm able to see a world of color. Everything inside was black and white. I wasn't really able to see anything. And now all of a sudden there's night and there's day and there's different shades and there's beautiful colors and there's scenery in the world and there's different seasons of the world. And I see that life is complex and I see that it's beautiful. And his brother is hysterical inside, crying that his other brother just died. And he assures him, "Trust me, when you get out of here, you'll understand how grateful we need to be that our existence changed." And writes the Gesher HaChaim that this is really the story of our lives, because we also live in that bubble that's very black and white, that's very constricted, it's very confined. Tashas choshech v'yihi laila. Zeha olam hazeha doma lalaila. We live in a confusing world. We really don't have a full perspective. We don't have an appreciation of what the world is really about. What's really happening? Why do things happen the way they do? And how does it make sense to us? And we remind ourselves, writes the Gesher HaChaim, of that twin who's still inside the womb, who's crying that his brother just died, but meanwhile the brother is living the life. And the only one who's stuck right now is you. But you don't even understand it. You don't even realize because you have no perspective. And you'll understand in just a few minutes, once you get out here, you'll understand how blessed we are to be in this existence. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us as well that at some point we're going to have a perspective. At some point we're going to have the vantage point that will give us the opportunity to get out of this limited view that we have, to get out of the finite existence that we live, to get out of the narrow vision that human beings so often live with in this world. And our HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us the opportunity to once again have that experience. The Rambam writes in the Mor Nebuchim, such a strange story. I know I'm telling a lot of stories today. But the Rambam writes in the Mor Nebuchim that there was a young child who was born in a desert. His parents were a little strange and they decided that they wanted to live out all by themselves on a desert island with nobody else. And one fine day they have a baby. And this young child is born and his mother dies at childbirth, unfortunately. So he never has a chance to meet his mother. And he grows up his whole life just with one other person, with a man, with his father. One fine day, somebody else comes to visit this island and they engage in conversation. And he asks this new friend that he meets, how do people come into the world? I'm just wondering, like, how does this happen? His friend says, what do you mean? You never learned science, biology? You never went to school? He says, no, I've never been to school. I've never met anybody in my life. You're the first person I'm meeting outside of my father. He says, well, you know, there are men and there are women. And each one's anatomy is very different. And at some point, when a couple gets married, it's possible that they can have a child. And he's fascinated. He says, what does that mean? And where does the child come from? How does that work? And he enlightens this young boy and he tells him, well, you know, it starts off as a very small embryo that we really can't recognize as a child at all. At some point it keeps growing, grows big enough until after 9 months, somehow comes out of the woman's body. This kid tells his friend, are you crazy? Think about it scientifically, it doesn't make any sense. If you don't have an airway to open up to your nostrils, you can't breathe. You're making this up. It's impossible. How can you live inside of a balloon, inside of a bubble for 9 months? It just can't be. You don't know anything. And the kid says to him, no, you don't understand. That's part of the miracle. This is how it works. And he says, and how does the person eat? So he says, no, there's an umbilical cord that connects to the child. What? So how does the blood of the child not all come out from the umbilical cord also? If there's a pipe going into the stomach, that should probably take everything from the child's body and emit it. So this can't be. You're making this up. And he's getting in this whole philosophical debate with this other child that he met for the first time. And he says, by the way, your problem is you don't even know that there's another gender in the world. You don't even know that there's something called a woman. And guess what? After the child is born, a woman even has the ability to nurse the child. And he says, what are you, crazy? If I would go and bite someone's finger, I can eat from them? You're insane. You're totally insane. You're making this up. And the Rambam talks about the story and he continues to elaborate how beautiful this conversation is. And he says, you can talk yourself till you're blue in the face. And you can try to explain this to someone who has no understanding. And as much as you'll try, you'll never be able to explain it to them. If you don't know what a woman is, and you don't know what a man is, and you don't understand the anatomy, and you know nothing about science, you'll never be able to understand scientifically how this works, because it doesn't make sense. It defies all rules. You're right. If somebody doesn't have nostrils, they can't breathe. And if someone doesn't have a mouth that's open, they can't eat. And if someone has a tube going into their stomach that's just open, how does all their blood not come out? All of these questions are amazing questions, but you need someone to enlighten you to understand how it could work. And if you're a kind of person that's growing up in your little bubble, you'll never understand it. And says the Rambam, it's exactly what happens in our world. That we have a lack of understanding because we're dealing with the infinite. We're dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's so beyond. We're dealing with something that is unlimited. Something that's so supreme, that's so beyond anything we'll ever be able to understand. The Rambam in the Mor Nebuchim writes, it's very similar to the experience of that child on the desert island who just will never come to an understanding. Go to school for a couple of years and maybe you'll get it. go meet a woman in your life, maybe you'll understand it. But until you do that, of course you can't understand it. Go see a woman who's pregnant and maybe you'll be able to start thinking and understanding that there's something bigger that I just don't get here. But the Rambam says, until you have that experience, you'll never get it. So how are we to deal with things before we have that vision? We live in a world of Oili Kidin Mesia, where we live in an Olam HaDimyon, where we live in just a fog and a vision of Olam HaZeh HaDom Al HaLaila. But the Rambam says, until that point, we need to remember, Ki Chol Derech HaMishpat. The Torah says, El Emunah Ve'Ein Avel, Tzadik V'Yashar, who we believe, that as much as this is infinite, as much as we don't understand it, as much as it's so beyond anything that we can fathom, we believe, Ki Chol Derech HaMishpat. We believe that it's beyond our understanding, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just. And as hard as it is for us to accept that, we need to believe, like that child, that there are certain things that we just will never get. Certain things that are just beyond us, like the Gesher HaChaim's mashal of the twins. You can sit and you can cry, but you don't even realize what you're crying about. You don't even realize that the life that you think is about to be over when leaving the mother's womb is really the life that's just beginning, is really the life that's giving you the greatest opportunity in the world that you were robbed of until this point. But it's hard to have that perspective when you're in the dark. And the Rambam writes, Karahodino akasav ki ein biyacholas rayonenu lahasik chachmasav etzedek dinav. The Torah says it's impossible for a person to ever fully appreciate or understand tzedek dinav, the righteousness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mishpat. B'chol mashapol v'yifal, everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, as the Navi says, ki gavu shamayim me'aretz, ken gavu drachai midarcheichem u'machshavosai mimachshavoseichem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the chasm that exists between heaven and earth is the same as the distance that exists between my understanding and human intellect. It's impossible to ever get a grasp on what's going on. Ba'al Kain, yesh lismoch ala yesod hazeh, says the Rambam, there are many people that try their best to investigate, to figure it out, to try to do their best, to really understand. And he says, lo hesig mamish, they will never get to a complete understanding. But he says, as the Gemara has an expression, tzela b'mayim adirim, you have somebody who's a scuba diver and goes into the deep water, v'hela cheres b'yado, he's excited that he thinks he found something down beneath in the bottom of the ocean, he brings it all the way back up, and he realizes it's just a shard of glass, it's nothing. So he says, you can sit and you can philosophize and you can delve into it and you can question and you can worry and you can wonder, and in the end of the day, we'll really never have that full understanding. Our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is explained in so many different ways, but there is a Medrash in Parshas Truma. Again, we're coming up to the 3 weeks. It's a time for us to think about Beis HaMikdash, Churban Beis HaMikdash, and we go back to the original time when the Pasuk says, Va'asu li migdash v'shachanti b'socham. What is the purpose of a Beis HaMikdash? Why do we need that? Does God really need our house? He can't figure out how to live somewhere in this world? So the Medrash says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. The Medrash shares with us why the Ribbono Shel Olam instructed us to build a Beis HaMikdash. Why do we have to have a Mishkan? And the answer is threefold. They all sound very similar, but you'll see in a minute why they're extremely unique. Number one, the Medrash says, Atem tzoni v'ani roeh. You are my sheep, and I am the shepherd. And it would make sense, Asu dir l'roeh sheyavu v'yireh eschem. The reason why I'm instructing you to make a Beis HaMikdash is because the shepherd needs a place of shelter. The shepherd needs a place, a little hut, where he can sit and watch over the flock. And therefore God instructs all of us, make me a Beis HaMikdash because I am the shepherd. I need a place to sit while I look after you. That's reason number one. Reason number two, the Medrash writes, Ani Shomer, I am the one who is the Shomer who looks after you. Shenemar hinelo yinum velo yisham Shomer Yisrael. And it would make sense when you have somebody who's guarding a field, it would make sense that you have a little shack for them to sit in. You need an outpost for them to sit in to make sure they can look after the field. And number three, the Medrash writes, Atem banim v'ani avichem. You are my children and I am your father. And it would make sense, it's only respectful, it's only right, that when your parents come to visit you, you give them a place to stay. And therefore, following up on that theme, we're told that we have to build a Beis HaMikdash. So again, we have number one, the Tzon and the Roeh. Number two, we have the Shomer HaKerem. Number three, we have the Av and the Banim, the parent and the child. So it sounds like the Medrash is saying the same message all three times. What is significant about each of these examples and what is brought out about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu by each one. And perhaps this really highlights our three-pronged relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. Number one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looked at as the Roeh Hatzon. We are expected to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We review him as the attentive shepherd, as the full caretaker and guide and leader of the Jewish people, who we turn to for advice, for direction, for instruction, like sheep, who have complete reliance, complete complete dependence, confidence and faith in their shepherd. They don't know where to go, they don't know how to do anything, and they put all of their trust in the shepherd. And that is number one, how we are supposed to have a perspective of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Shomer HaKerem, which means he's the guardian of the Jewish people. He's our protector, he's our shield. He is our security. And that is a different aspect, a different element of our relationship with him. But most importantly, we need to view our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an av lebanav, as a parent to his children, as a loving, devoted, dedicated, and caring father or mother. And this is the ultimate reason why we're told that building a Beis HaMikdash is so important, because it's to remind us of these three relationships that we have. After the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the Navi tells us, Hinei zeh omed achar kosleinu, mashgiach min achalonos, metzitz min acharakim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands behind the wall, which is a reference to the only wall that's left from the Beis HaMikdash. Mashgiach min achalonos, metzitz min acharakim. So how do you translate that word? Mashgiach min achalon means God looks through the window. Metzitz min acharakim means he looks through a little crack in the wall. Sounds like it's the same thing. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter explains that no, it means two very different human experiences. What is the difference between looking through a window and looking through a crack in the wall? When you look through a window, I look outside, somebody outside looks in, they can see me, I can see them, we watch each other. Full transparency. When I look through a crack, you know, you have your child who goes out to the bus and they want to feel independent. So they say, no, I'm not going till you close the door. Don't watch me. Which stupid parent doesn't watch their kid? Every single parent closes the door and looks through the peephole to see if the kid is going to get on the bus safely. We all do that. It's what any responsible parent should do. But we don't want our kid to know. So we look through the peephole, and when they turn around to see if we're watching, they can't see us. Because we can see them, but they can't see us. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter writes, there are different experiences that the Jewish people go through. There are times in our life or in our experience as Jews where we feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mashgiach min achalonos. He's looking at us through the window. We turn around and we see him and we wave to him and he waves back. And we see miracles and we see incredible events and we see unbelievable experiences as a people, as a nation. That's sometimes how we feel. There are other times when we feel God is behind the wall. He doesn't care about us. He doesn't see us. He's not paying attention. But don't forget, even at moments like that, he's metzitz min acharakim. He's still looking at us. He has not forgotten. He's not abandoning his world or his people. Just when we turn around, we don't see him. Metzitz min acharakim, God has a watchful eye. He's just looking through the crack in the wall. And when we turn around, unfortunately, we're unable to appreciate that he's there. But he's a father, he's a mother. Of course he's there for his children. You think a parent ever stops thinking for a moment about their children? How could you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stops thinking about us? And that is the opportunity that we have during the 3 weeks, during this period of Avelus that's coming up, to think about how much is HaKadosh Baruch Hu a presence in our lives? I remember, I think I saw in the Chafetz Chaim's Sefer on Chumash, when will this all be straightened out? You know, we talk about Geula, and you ask yourself, how many years will it possibly take to figure out the crisis in the Middle East, to figure out all the problems that the Jewish people have all over the world? This is going to take forever to straighten itself out. How is this going to work? When will it be worked out? And the Chafetz Chaim says that when he read the pasuk that described Yosef once again re-entering into his family after so many years being separated from them. So what happens? Here they are looking for a geula, looking for a Yeshua. the whole family of Yaakov Avinu. And nobody knows, how is this ever going to work itself out? Look, we killed our brother, we destroyed his life, our whole family's been torn to pieces since then. How is this ever going to work? And how does it end up working out? All he does is say two words. Ani Yosef. Ani Yosef. And suddenly, no more confusion. The whole experience just became clear in 1 second. Just with two words, he said, Ani Yosef. One simple, straightforward declaration of one brother to another. Ani Yosef. And immediately, the facts became indisputable. The whole storyline became undeniable. It was just absolutely clear to everyone. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, that's what it means when the psukim say, Ani Hashem. You know how all of this is going to work out? We don't need a big deal. All we need is HaKadosh Baruch Hu to reveal Himself and say, Ani Hashem. And in 1 second, everything will become absolutely clear. You have questions about things that go on in our world? Well, so do I. So do all of us. And it's legitimate to have questions. Yosef and his brothers had many questions. And by saying those two words, Ani Yosef, suddenly everything became completely clear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu assures us all he needs to do is utter the words Ani Hashem. When the Ribbono Shel Olam will once again reveal his presence to us, give us that insight, and just say Ani Hashem, appreciate what that means, Ani Hashem, with clarity, everything will work itself out. We won't need time. We won't need committees. Everything will just work out when HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself and once again re-enters into our lives in the powerful way that he's supposed to be in all of our lives. So these are just some thoughts to think about as we go through, as we travel through Chodesh Tammuz. Once again, I just want everyone to be aware that